church at me, now I go to pray. I'm on my own thing, I'm on my own flex. Deep in the bush, I meditate on myself. Life was a mystery in my history, it gets misty, see. After the rain and the heat, put my heel in the hot rubber on the road. Running from crapo. If you don't know, that's a toad. We was in love way before the first. We was in love way before the hurt. Snakes crawling in the bush. Close my eyes, little brother, look. You look cute when you look cute when you look cute when you smile. 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 Trini boy running through the bush every day. Running through the bush trying to make my way. Through the valley, through the hills, through the cane. Through the tropical storm, the rain. Jordan River rolling home. Jordan River rolling home. Jordan River, hear my song. Jordan River, hear my song, yeah. Jordan River rolling home. Jordan River rolling home. Jordan River, hear my song. Jordan River, hear my song, yeah.
You know they say a pretty smile goes a long way. Up and down the hallway, that's when they call it the cheese. Yeah, and that's what I wanna believe. That's what I just cannot see. At least in my case though, that's what I just cannot see. Still young in my day, so maybe in a few years I might get it.
Hello, this is Tony Bardock of the Little Guitar Army, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Yo! This one here goes out to the struggle in the tradition of the old poets. Yo, the nation of poets. We haven't forgotten that. Yo, in the tradition of Aresi Sekarche, God bless his soul, I want to say something to you, my friends around the mic. Until the lion learns to speak, the tales of hunting will be weak. My poetry hails within the streets. My poetry fails to be discreet. It travels across the earth and seas, from Eritrea to the West Indies. It knows no boundaries, no cheese. It studied in parts of Greece. I'm sick as far as lyrics, not with as far as gimmicks. I spit barrage and limit the shit they talk and rip it. I'm hip, the hop is living. I skip the obvious, women don't get what I'm presenting. No rims, my mind is spinning. I was born and raised in a place where the tone of flame would blaze, where the foreigners not embrace, where they warn you jog and pace, where the loners lower their gaze, where the corners slower to chase, where they twist and turn in a maze, with a pistol upon your face. So come with me to my lungs, the depth, and be overrun with passion. See how I come, no cash, I'm free in the slums. The past can we overcome, I'm asking we be the ones to actually be the ones to free our people from guns. Hey, until the lion learns to speak, the tales of hunting will be weak. My poetry hails within the streets. My poetry fails to be discreet. It travels across the earth and seas, from Somalia to the West Indies. It knows no boundaries, no cheese. It studied in parts of Greece. Say I'm sick as far as lyrics, not with as far as gimmicks. I spit barrage and limit the shit they talk and rip it. I'm hip, the hop is living. I skip the obvious, women don't get what I'm presenting. No rims, my mind is spinning.
I want to ask you a few things before I conform to the popular belief about where I was born. Are they still illin', still killing, popping the corn? How's the horn? How's the love waving the ocean morn? How about the young? Do they still possess the poetry tongue? And do they still greet and say it like the depth of the lung? How's the nomad? The herd graze well this year. From the news to what I know, to going gap and clear. How's the earth? How are the stars under we converse? Do you still await on change like a new moon's verse? Does it still flood? Ancient wisdom parallel with blood. Do you still see the painted vision? Only script deep, or did you fight off the colonized mind? What if the rainy season? Do the kids still bury and get taken with uncertainty like me scared of leaving? How are the poets, the women, and the orphans torn? I miss them all like old opportunities gone. What if the elders, storytellers, and abandoned homes? Miss them all like childhood, reminisce with songs. Disputes, do they still settle them by bloody issues? Fist rules, rather finger equipped with sick tools. What if the wind? I recall it with serenity's end. When the breeze would come and the trees would bend, then the people would say, look what it leaves to sin. And the air was violent and our care was silent. And the only law we bore was a pair of tyrants. Me, you know, this is why I'm down in deep indigo. And I sleep really poor in the circumstances. Anyway, how is stress? Does it still rule your chest? Do the camps still rape baby girls without breasts? How are moms? Are they still screaming, put away your arms? And against the dispossession of their family on farms? How are the main rivers and the lakes and the seas? Are they still angry with us for our poisonous deeds? And the lakes and the seas, for our poisonous deeds.
This is my blues for the horn, for the horn. This is my blues for the horn, for the horn. This is my blues for the horn, for the horn. This is my blues for the horn, for the horn. This is my blues for the horn, for the horn. This is my blues for the horn.
Did the rates multiply? Did the poor fight the drought with their minimum supply? Did the warlords abort the wars and force support of the peace deport to promote disease and ease and increase divorce? What of police and courts? Are we still heathen force? Leaking pores and treated lead to the bleeding courts? What of the kind and good? Can they still laugh intensely like the mind and word? Or is it innocence lost but where the iron stood? What of the playwright's reflection of the...
Listening live to the 14th episode of the Armaan Andakil Show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policymakers from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Armaan Rana. It's Saturday, the 18th of May, 13th of July at 5:09 p.m. What did I say? We are broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territory of the Hankamunum-speaking Musqueam people. As you can tell, it's just me today. So Akil is running the Nienacker, I believe. He's running some marathon. I believe it's the Nienacker. So he can't correct me when I mix up the dates and fix the script. And I was reading about this Nienacker, if this is the one he is running, it's quite interesting. The Nienackering North Shore Trail, I'm quoting from their website, is a challenging 30-mile foot race from Horseshoe Bay to Deep Cove. The course will appeal to people with some experience in trail or endurance events. It provides runners with magnificent views of the city, mountain, and ocean. Climbing 8,000 feet, Running Wild magazine has recognized the race as one of the 25 toughest races in North America. So hopefully he survives and he's back next time. All best of luck to him. Anyway, so how's everyone feeling about 2024's election bonanza so far? We've had the major ones, I guess, we've had this year were Mexico, India, France, the UK, South Africa, and there are probably more that I'm forgetting because they happened so long ago. But the major ones we're going to be talking about today are going to be the UK and France. And then we'll talk about the, you know, the U.S. election, which hasn't taken place yet, towards the end of the show. Yeah, and I don't think we'll have time to get to some provincial politics, but let's see. But yeah, so if you have not been, if you have been living under a rock, the United Kingdom went to the polls on the 4th of July. And in the election, the Labour Party under Sir Keir Starmer won a total of 411 out of the 650 seats, so a huge majority, while the Conservative Party under Rishi Sunak won only 121, the worst result ever for the 200-year-old Conservative Party, which I believe is one of the oldest parties, I think the oldest party in the world, and you know it's won the most elections of any party in the world. It's not even close. So really terrible result for them. And Rishi Sunak actually called this election early, and you know things didn't really start super well for him. Let's take a listen to how he kicked things off.
Well, spare a thought for the UK Prime Minister today as he called an early election that will see the Brits go to the polls on July 4th. With an uphill battle to win, not only did Rishi Sunak have to stand in the pouring rain, he also had to struggle to be heard through the strains of things can only get better blaring from speakers outside.
Now is the moment for Britain to choose its future, to decide whether we want to build on the progress we have made or risk going back to square one with no plan and no certainty. Earlier today, I spoke with His Majesty the King to request the dissolution of Parliament.
Unsurprisingly, the UK press haven't held back with headlines including drown and out and things can only get wetter.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Sunak, things did not get better for him. They actually got worse because of significant vote splitting that took place on the right. So the populist right-wing reform party led by Nigel Farage, who was kind of one of the architects of Brexit, picked up 14% of the vote. Let's take a listen now to Jacob Rees-Mogg, who was Boris Johnson, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson's leader in the House of Commons, who lost his seat and used a somewhat interesting metaphor describing the relationship that he's hoping for in the future now that, between the Tories and the Reform Party.
Are very close. What does that tell you about dividing the Tory family? If you divide the Tory family, you make it worse for both parts, the in-laws and the outlaws, so to speak, and that what we need is a coalition, a coalescence of the various parts of the Tory party family. If the Conservatives and Reform are very...
Yes, that's Jacob Rees-Mogg. So, who, as I mentioned, lost his seat. So, it is interesting. So that's probably, you know, potentially they're going to have to select a new leader. Sunak has left the leadership of the Conservative Party. And, you know, in the short term, it may seem that the far right have been beaten back. But the Conservatives would actually are going to have to do some soul searching and potentially, you know, somehow absorb the reform into them. And I do want to conjecture something here that, yes, people were tired of the Conservatives, I presume, in the UK after 14 years, and there was definitely some anti-incumbency there. But it is telling that the dam finally broke when the candidate put forward by the Conservatives was non-white. And you might be like, hey, Armand, why are you making everything about race? But actually, everything is about race, and I'll have Sunak. Let's hear from Sunak.
Yeah, well, my two daughters have to see and hear Reform people who campaign for Nigel Farage calling me an effing packy. It hurts, and it makes me angry, and I think he has some questions to answer. And I don't repeat those words lightly. You know, I do so deliberately because this is too important not to call out clearly for what it is. Well, when you see reform candidates and campaigners seemingly using racist and misogynistic language and opinions, seemingly without challenge, I think it tells you something about the culture within the Reform Party. You know, Andrew Tate isn't an important voice for men, he's a vile misogynist. And our politics and country is better than that. And as Prime Minister, but more importantly, as a father of two young girls, it's my duty to call out this corrosive and divisive behaviour.
So yeah, there's Rishi Sunak explaining how he felt about the racial nature of the campaign against him by Reform UK. The other phenomenon in this race were the centrist Liberal Democrats. They picked up around 70 seats, primarily from Conservatives. This is a bit of a fun video. It is the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davies, bungee jumping off a crane. Yeah, so this is what he decided to do.
Bye, Liberal Democrats!
So that's the Liberal Democratic leader, Ed Davies. And just, to describe it a bit, he's literally flopping around after bungee jumping off a crane and spinning around. And as he's doing that, he's, encouraging people to vote Liberal Democrat. Their campaign actually was quite interesting. They focused, primarily on more local issues compared to last time where there were, kind of primarily focus on, reversing Brexit. They focus on support for carers and those sort of attention-grabbing stunts. He did a number of them throughout the campaign. And here's Liberal Democrat leader Ed Davies in talking about, opening up about his son's condition and how he kind of brought that into his campaign. Let's take a listen.
Turning off the tap to brush your teeth.
But yeah, I think there is a connection. I'll pick up in a bit. But I think there's a connection between, these sort of silly stunts. I was listening to this British radio host, and there's a connection between these silly stunts and the carer part of the piece, actually, because these sort of stunts are often used in, in fundraisers. And also, I imagine, in those situations, and based on my personal experiences, having epilepsy, when dealing with these kind of neurological conditions, there's potentially a way to kind of just, one coping way is to kind of just embrace absurdity and embrace those moments of, of happiness that you have. Let's take a listen.
To get cut through in political campaigns. For Ed Davey in this election, the personal has become the political, his own family's story now the backbone of the Liberal Democrats' message.
We started talking about it quite gently into my first year or so of leadership. We got this reaction from people saying, thank you for talking about it.
Come on, my sweetheart, come on.
This Lib Dem film of Ed Davey at home caring for his disabled son, viewed millions of times. A carer since he was a child, first nursing his dying mother and now caring for his teenage boy.
I was a young carer. We had our first child, John, and we realised after about a year that he was going to be severely disabled.
His wife, Emily, who recently revealed she has multiple sclerosis, also cares for John.
The thing about being a carer is it's absolutely exhausting.
It's physically exhausting. It's emotionally exhausting.
For John, he's now 16, what do you hope for his future?
The first thing is to enable him to be as independent as he possibly can be and be the wonderful boy and man that he can be. I think any parent would say this. No one's going to care for him like we do. I mean, there'll be some wonderful carers out there, I'm sure, who look after their patients very much, but no one's going to hold him like we hold him.
That's why it's easier just to focus on the immediate, isn't it? And the practical. And you can have all sorts of legal ideas. I'm also a solicitor. I have trusts and all of that, but actually, it's what you've got to have as a caring community, a caring society, and that's our best. That's the best hope for the future.
A small party, it's hard for the Lib Dems to grab attention. But after years in something of a political wilderness, Ed Davey has at least won an audience. The big question now is whether it will help the Lib Dems clean up.
Yeah, and they ended up doing quite well in the election. The other aspect of this election that I'm not sufficiently informed to talk about was actually the collapse of the SNP in Scotland, which also netted Labour 36 seats. So the question you might ask yourself is, who is Labour and what are they going to do? I would say Keir Starmer is a ruthless moderate. He purged the former leftist leader Jeremy Corbyn from the Labour Party. Jeremy Corbyn and five other independents did win seats, largely in Labour strongholds, focusing on the ongoing crisis in Gaza, where they found Starmer had at times been muted in his condemnation of Israel. For example, there was an interview where Starmer suggested that Israel had the right to conduct a siege, cut off water and power from Gaza in response to Hamas's terrorist attacks. He later walked back those comments. However, he did take a much more, you know, muted response than maybe Jeremy Corbyn would have as leader of the Labour Party. There was, though, a small amount of a class element which he did introduce into this election through reintroducing a tax on private schools. So, in a highly stratified culture like the UK, they actually, at present, you don't pay VAT on private schools. And he kind of launched this policy to kind of remove that. And let's take a listen to him defending that policy.
Working parent from London, and I send my...
So this is a Indian uncle who's asking him about why he's reintroducing VAT on school fees.
Hi. So I'm an average working parent from London, and I send my daughter to a private school, which in turn saves the government about £7,500 per year. But by now, having to pay 20% VAT, we would be priced out, and we would have to send our children to state school. I mean, the rich would continue sending their children. It's us who would have to make the change. And the ultimate losers in all of this are the children, who are meant to be our futures.
I have nothing against private schools. I absolutely recognise that many parents work hard and save hard to send their children to private schools because they have aspiration for their children. I equally accept that every parent has aspiration for their children, whether they go to private school or not. But I absolutely respectfully want to meet your point because it is a concern. It's a concern to you and to other people. For those children in a state secondary school who don't have the teachers they need, that's not a one-year problem or a two-year budgeting problem. It's a lifelong problem because if they don't get the qualifications they need at 15 and 16, they can't go and do what they want. So we need to recruit 6,500 teachers for our state secondary schools to make sure every child, wherever they come from, whatever their background, whichever school they go to, has the same opportunity. And I say we will get rid of the tax break for private schools and and use that money directly okay. to fund those teachers in our state secondary schools.
But this would mean that you would tax the working parents who send their children to private school. Because the super rich will continue doing that. And it's only the working parents who will have to make a decision or pay the taxes.
The position at the moment is there's a tax break. So you pay VAT on other services, but you don't pay it for private schools. Now, I understand why that's been in place, but it's a tax break that we are removing. It's not an introduction of a new tax. We're simply saying we need to find the money to properly fund our state secondary schools.
So, yeah, that's Keir Starmer. He also killed the infamous Rwanda plan, which was this kind of bizarre scene that sounds as bizarre as it was, which was to pay Rwanda money to send UK asylum seekers to Rwanda. And this plan was originally hatched by Boris Johnson, but then continued by, under Rishi Sunak. The plan so far has cost British taxpayers, wait for it, £300 million. So a lot of money that they're effectively writing off now. So kind of to summarize the story we are left with is that the Conservatives collapsed and their vote split with the Reform Party, partially due to racial reasons, partially due to, you know, anti-incumbency. Stormer actually got less votes than his predecessors by tacking to the center. So the total number of votes he got in this election was less than Jeremy Corbyn got in the last election. However, it did open the door to strategic voting amongst moderates, you know, people who didn't really care at this point, between the Liberal Democrats and Labour, and just wanted the Tories out, which didn't really happen last time, where you had, you know, kind of people kind of more ideologically voting either Liberal Democrat or Labour in the last election. And on top of that, the SNP collapsed in Scotland. So that's kind of the story. And the net result was he gets this massive majority with 33% of the vote. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with it. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Armand and Akil show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are going through some of the recent election results. We're just talking about the UK. We'll be talking about France after this short ad break. Do stay tuned.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, Talib Tin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, Talib Tin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
Tune your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Primiti or saxophone Len Wee. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Featuring artists such as Anthony Braxton, Abigail, Solange, Ghostface Killer, Wynette Coleman, Sunny Ryan. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primitti or saxophone la nuit.
Yo, yo, this is the boy, Jacuzzi LaFleur. You hear with Crimes and Treasons Radio, Jazz Cartier. Y'all know who it is, Golden Child, baby. Let's get it.
What up? This is Machine Gun Kelly, and right now I am tuned in to Crimes and Treasons, goddammit.
Hey, yo, this is Isaiah Rashad.
Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze.
Yo, 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 what's good? It's Bodega Bams, a.k.a. Poppy, a.k.a. Young Don Francisco.
Hey, yo, it's Baby No Money.
What's good, y'all? It's your boy Terrell Safady.
Hey, what's up? It's Tion Gibbs.
What up? This is Stango.
And this is your boy Waldo.
And you're listening to Crimes and Treasons Radio.
Yeah, bitch.
What's up? This is Peanut Butter Wolf. You're listening to Crimes and Treason Radio.
Hello, this is Blow Fly.
Hey, this is Halo.
Hey, what's up? It's St. John, and you're not listening to Crimes and Treasons. It's lit.
Hey, I know who it is, man. It's your boy, Saha the Prince.
Yo, what up, though? This is Ill Tone from Blacktivity.
Yo, peace, family. It's your Guala Dizzy Rice.
Yo, this is Remy Wolf.
Hey!
Yo, what's poppin', man? It's I Am Super.
It's J Worthy, a.k.a. P Worthy.
Hey, yo, you already know what time it is. It's your boy, ASAP Yams, a.k.a. Yamborghini, a.k.a. Lil Newport, a.k.a. I got too many aliases, but you already know what time it is. Crime and treason in this motherfucker. Shout out to these motherfuckers. They putting it down with that real trill shit.
Yo, 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 yo. It's Camp Blow Out.
Crimes and treasons. That's what we believe in while we blowing the treason.
Crooks out.
Tune in to Vancouver's Rap Radio Show every Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Armand and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are just a solo show this time. Akil is running the knee knacker to knack his knees, I guess. We're breaking down the election results from the UK, France, and looking ahead at the US election. We're going to move on to France in a moment, but just a developing story that a lot of folks are pinging me about is that Donald Trump has been shot. It appears he's fine, and apparently one spectator is dead. I don't know what's happened to the gunman, but Trump was whisked away from the rally. So yeah, that is what is happening right now. Quite concerning. You know, political assassination is not something that's as common, or assassination attempts as common anymore in you know, American politics, but was quite common 50 years ago, I guess. And I do hope we're not entering another era like that. So we'll probably cover that more in our next show. And the fallout of that. But moving on to the French elections that took place on July, on multiple days, but including the final rounds on July the 7th. Let's take a listen to this that basically, you know, sets up what was at stake there.
Macron, famous for risk-taking, just pulled the pin on a political grenade, calling a snap election for early June weeks before the Olympics, throwing down the gauntlet to the French far right, hours after Macron stood with President Biden to remember D-Day and the fight against Hitler during the Second World War. The vote for the National Assembly, the equivalent of Congress, comes after the far right surged in European parliamentary elections.
Ils ont lancé un signal clair. Ils ont dit, nous souhaitons que l'on change de direction. Eh bien, nous leur disons, chiche, nous sommes prêts à le faire.
The far right National Rally Party is led by Marine Le Pen and her popular protégé, Jordan Bardella.
Tous les Français.
Their party, nationalist and populist, has spent years working to lose the label fascist. Le Pen has praised Russia's President Putin, Brexit, and wants to drastically curb immigration. If they win in July, Macron will welcome the world to the Olympics alongside National Rally ministers.
It will be the obligation for Emmanuel Macron to choose a prime minister among the Rassemblement National and maybe among the coalition of the radical rights.
Macron beat Le Pen in the last presidential elections. Here at the Macron rally, and people have just gone crazy because they've just announced the result on the big screen here, the exit poll. But she has vowed to stand again. And since then, France has seen tensions, protests, and even riots. Across Europe this weekend, far-right movements won more votes in countries like Italy, Germany, the Netherlands, and Austria. Though in Italy, the far-right leader, Giorgia Meloni, has been more moderate in office. And centrists did emerge with a slim majority in this weekend's EU elections.
We won the European election.
A victory celebrated by EU President Ursula von der Leyen.
Mit anderen Worten, die Mitte hat gehalten. Aber es ist auch wahr, dass die Extremen auf der linken und auf der rechten Seite an Unterstützung gewonnen haben.
Calling this legislative election is a huge risk for President Macron. It could open the door to what critics will say will be the most right-wing government since the 1940s. But Macron only has a few more years in office, and he clearly hopes not to be a lame duck president. Suddenly, it's not only the US that faces a history-making vote this year. Ellison?
So yeah, that was the coverage. And I think that's probably what most people understood of what was going down in the French election. And I think the way it was covered, and here's my, you know, media criticism, is that it kind of makes it seem like, it's very obvious, like, is Macron an idiot? Like, you just lost these European elections. If we look at the results, the far right got 31% of the vote. And why would you go and, I believe Macron's faction lost 10 seats. Why would you go and launch an election at that time? And to understand that, so my answer is no, he's not an idiot. He had a plan in mind, which he executed, which didn't necessarily go as he intended, but there's still a chance he may emerge with some level of success, and we'll talk about that. But yeah, and to understand his plan, we need to understand a bit more the French voting system. So I believe the European parliamentary elections are more proportional, either proportional system or exactly proportional. However, the French system uses a flavor of first that passed the post with runoffs. And so what happens is that you go out and vote in the first round for your preferred candidate. And if they cross 50, then they win the seat. If they don't, there's a runoff election. And I believe candidates with less than 10% of the vote are removed. But on top of that, parties can potentially remove candidates. What can also happen for the second round, and voters can also see, you know, which candidates have done well in this riding, who's actually likely to win. And that's, you know, so people kind of vote their, let's say, their heart in the first round, and in the second round, they have the opportunity to kind of use their you know, their brain if they want to and see, like, what do some sort of tactical voting, if that's what they feel like doing. Or they can make a protest vote still. However, you know, an outcome of this is that in the, for example, in the presidential election a few years ago where Macron won, what happened, right? In the first round, most of the three candidates got about 20-something percent of the vote each. And in the second round, the leftist leader, Mélenchon, fell out. And he told his voters not to vote for Le Pen. And Macron ended up winning that runoff, right? So what he was hoping would happen is that a similar thing would happen. And why was the timing right now? So what happened, the reason the timing was opportune right now was compared to the last legislative election where the parties on the left were in some sort of alliance. They had actually had a falling out and they were not in some sort of electoral alliance, which made it more easy for Macron to pull up the strategy of like, hey, Le Pen wins the first round, everyone has to unite around me because I'm the second party and I can go up against Le Pen. Why were the left divided? So the main factions in the left in France are the Socialist Party, which is kind of more, it's called a Socialist Party, it's a more kind of moderate center-left-ish party. Macron himself was a member of that party. He served as an advisor to the president, François Hollande, I believe his name is, at one point in time. So ideologically, it's not that far from Macron's centrist party. The other party is called France, I'm going to put France en Soumise, or France en Baud. And they're, you know, either the left or the far left, depending on who you ask. And their leader is Mélenchon. And they actually, the France en Baud at this point, have more seats than the Socialist Party because Macron has kind of been eating the Socialist Party's lunch for the last few elections. And so in the last, after the, you know, the war in, you know, the conflict started in Gaza with, you know, Hamas's terrorist attacks and then Israel's attempted ethnic cleansing, if not genocide, in Gaza that's ongoing till this day, there was split where France en Baud actually was refusing to didn't want to describe those events as a terrorist attack. And due to that, they fell out. And this was the opportunity that Macron saw. He said, look, the left is divided, the right is ascendant. I'll call elections now before the left has a time to, you know, figure out their stuff. And I'll be the main guy to go up against, my candidates will be me the main guys to go up against Le Pen. And even though it seems at face value that the right is ascendant, because I'll be the only alternative to the right, I will actually win a very large number of seats. However, what happened the moment after the European elections, the left saw how things went down, they saw Macron call the election, they very quickly realized they face an existential threat to their own kind of existence. And they put together, so the last time it was their kind of union was called the New Ecological and Social People's Union. And the new configuration is called the New Popular Front. And you came up with, you know, 150 actions. Specifically on the issue of Gaza, they did describe Hamas's actions as a terrorist attack. They also call for the recognition of independent, calling on France to recognize an independent Palestinian state and investigation into Israeli war crimes. So they were able to put aside those differences and come up with a program involving, you know, a kind of more populist program involving redistributive policies. And they emerged, let's listen to what happened, but they've effectively emerged as the largest bloc in the French results after the second round. Let's take a listen to the results. The other thing, you know, I want to mention is what took place between the two rounds, right? So the first round, the far right emerged as the first party. And there were a lot of polls saying, hey, the far right are going to win a majority in the second round. And, you know, they were already, you know, Jordan Baldella was already picked, who is, you know, as we heard, he's the right-hand man of Le Pen and the prime ministerial candidate for the national rally. He was already discussing, you know, who his finance minister would be and such. What happened is that the parties on the left basically immediately withdrew their candidates in all parties where the National Front was first and their candidate was third. And Macron sometimes removed some candidates in strategic locations when that happened, and sometimes did not, because there is a perception of Mélenchon and Francis Baud as the far left. However, there were cases where individual candidates from center, from Macron's coalition, or, you know, even center-right parties, who, of their own volition, they stepped aside. And I think one candidate I read, he said that he can, you know, have civil discussions with opposing political forces, but he cannot have those discussions with enemies of the Republic. So, for some people, this was, you know, a do or die moment, regardless of their political ideology. And they made common cause between the center and the left-wing parties to oppose the far right of the national rally. And let's take a listen to those results presently.
A shocking result in France, where the left-wing alliance is projected to beat out the far-right national rally in the second round of the country's snap parliamentary election.
Social justice won tonight. Environmental justice has won. Tonight, the people won, and it's only just the beginning.
The new Popular Front, comprised of five parties, is projected to win 172 to 192 seats, according to Ipsos pollsters for the French broadcaster, with President Emmanuel Macron's Ensemble Alliance expected to take between 150 to 170 seats, and the National Rally Party, led by 28-year-old Jordan Bardella and overseen by Marine Le Pen, projected to take 132 to 152 seats.
L'Alliance. By deciding to deliberately paralyze our institutions, Emmanuel Macron has now pushed the country.
So that was Jordan Bardella speaking. But I think, you know, one thing that I kind of hinted at earlier, that there's still an opportunity for Macron to emerge from this victorious. And what is that opportunity? Is if he can somehow, and this is what he's kind of openly attempting to do, carve out the Socialist Party from the left coalition, which, you know, historically was quite close to him ideologically. I don't know how feasible that is. That is, you know, something I don't have that much understanding of French politics to understand if that's something that could actually happen. But that seems to be his play at the moment. And we'll have to wait and see if that happens, or does the, you know, the left-wing coalition manage to, you know, somehow convince Macron to Macron's elements of Macron's faction to work with them, or at least to support their government for the time being. But most likely, yeah, it'll be some sort of paralysis going forward, until continued paralysis, given the almost equal size of the three major blocs in the election. Let's take another very short break so I can just catch my breath, listen to some ads, listen to the cricket ad again. I like that one. I'm always down to listen to cricket ads.
Watching or discussing all things cricket? Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Turn your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Primiti or saxophone Len Wee. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalist saxophonist, composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Featuring artists such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Ailey, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Ornette Coleman, Sonny Rollins. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primiti or saxophone Lenui.
Yo, yo, this is the boy, Jacuzzi Lefler. You hear with Crimes and Treasons Radio. Jazz Cartier, y'all know who it is. Golden Child, baby, let's get it.
Hey! What up? This is Machine Gun Kelly, and right now I am tuned in to Crimes and Treasons, goddammit.
Hey, what is up, Isaiah Rashad?
Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze.
Yo, 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 what's good? It's Bodega Bams, a.k.a. Poppy, a.k.a. Young Don Francisco.
Hey, yo, it's Baby No Money.
What's good, y'all? It's your boy Terrell Safady.
Hey, what's up? It's Tion Kidd.
What up? This is Spango.
And this is your boy Waldo.
And you're listening to Crimes and Treasons Radio.
Yeah, bitch.
What's up? This is Peanut Butter Wolf. You're listening to Crimes and Treason Radio.
Hello, this is Blow Fly.
Hey, this is Halo.
Hey, what's up? It's St. John, and you're not listening to Crimes and Treasons. It's lit.
Hey, I know who it is, man. It's your boy,
Sahada
Prince.
Yo, what up, though? This is Ill Tone from Blacktivity.
Yo, peace, family. It's your Gwala Dizzy Rice.
Yo, this is Remy Wolf.
Hey!
Yo, it's
Papa
Man.
I am
Super.
It's Jay Worthy, a.k.a. P Worthy.
Hey, yo, you already know what time it is. It's your boy, ASAP Yams, a.k.a. Yamborghini, a.k.a. Lil Newport, a.k.a. I got too many motherfuckers. Aliases, but you already know what time it is. Crime and treason in this motherfucker. Shout out to these motherfuckers. They putting it down with that real trill shit.
Yo, it's Camp Blow Out.
Crimes and treasons, that's what we believe in. While we blowing the treason.
Crooks out.
Tune in to Vancouver's rap radio show every Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Tuning in, you're listening to the Arman and Akil show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to kind of blitz through this conversation about Biden. Biden, as everyone knows, he had a terrible debate. It's hard to describe how bad his debate performance was. At least in my opinion, it was probably the worst debate performance I've ever seen of any candidate running for any office in any election. I've watched local debates here in Canada, federal elite debates, primary debates in the US, UK debates. I was watching a French language debate the other day. And I've never seen an individual perform so poorly. I've seen bad debates, but where one individual just performs so badly, I've never seen anything like that. And you know, when you have two people head to head, it's more stark as well, because Biden had a couple of bad debates in the Democratic primary in 2020 as well. But this one, there was just literally no escape for him. Everyone and their uncle is calling for him to stand down as the Democratic candidate. And now he just mixed up Putin and Zelensky at a name conference introducing Zelensky. I was going to play the clip, but we don't have time. And there's some important data I want to get to. So he was always the king of gaffes, but his voice, especially during the debate, sounded a lot weaker, and he was just really stumbling over his words, losing his train of thought. And I believe over 70% of Americans thinks he lacks the cognitive capabilities to be president. And he's currently trailing in almost every swing state. And I'm still here to tell you that, you know, in my opinion, he will be the nominee. And it's not just because Joe Biden is selfish, has a massive ego, or refuses to step down, though those things may be true. And the major reason is two of them. The first one is, at this point in time, who is the alternative? Who is the presumptive alternative? And if we just look at this polling, there's similar polling done for, you get slightly different results, but I just picked one. Because they included Michelle Obama, which I find interesting. So they're showing matchups. Trump versus Biden is 40-40. Michelle Obama versus Trump, 50 for Michelle Obama, 39 for Trump. Harris versus Trump, 42 for Harris, 43 for Trump. Gavin Newsom, 39 to 42 for Trump. Gretchen Whitmer, 36 to 41 for Trump. Andy Beshear, 36 to 40 for Trump. J.B. Pritzker, 34 to 40 for Trump. So in that one, you know, Biden actually is doing better than his potential substitutes, and or similar or better. It's all within the margin of error. There's another poll where they're looking at a bunch of different candidates. This is BendyX and Amandi International. That one, Hillary Clinton was introduced. She's 2 points up on Trump. Gavin Newsom is 3 points behind. Whitmore is 4 points behind. Harris is 1 point up. Biden is 1 point down. In this other data for progress, Harris is tied with Trump. Biden is 1 point up on Trump. And what was this other one? This one is JL Partners. Harris is 11 points down and Biden is 5 points down on Trump. So there are a variety of results, but there isn't this compelling narrative that this particular candidate is just easily defeating Trump in all the polls. And, you know, Biden is just losing just based because he's kind of old and kind of losing his mind. And that's, I think, also why we've kind of seen all these different factions, from the Congressional Black Caucus to the House Progressive to labor unions, kind of say, hey, we want to stick with Biden. When, you know, Bernie and his wing of the party were the strongest opponents to Biden in the 2020 primary, and even during his presidency, some of the strongest and criticism has come from that wing of the party. And it's mostly just the moderates and some of the, donors who are, into the faction of the Democratic Party. They're really calling Biden to resign, which is kind of interesting to watch. I had a bunch of other material about Trump, but we've actually come to the end of today's